everyone.
Recording in progress.
Thank you, Rehan, for the recording. All right. Peace be upon you all. For everyone who's joining us, we welcome you. We welcome you all in the very first session and one of many for Build Palestine sessions. We're going to focus in these reclaiming funding in times of crisis. We're going to work with some of the experts working in international organizations or civil society organizations in Palestine. Allow me to start by taking a minute of silence for the martyrs of Palestine, who have exceeded 10,000 martyrs, and we wish the well recovery for 20,000 injured and wounded persons. And we really hope that this mass massacre, which has been going on for the 75th year and going, and this prolonged crisis, we hope that this would be put to an end. The 7th of October was not the start of this. This month has been the worst for our people since the catastrophe, the Nakba in 1948. Most of us are still in shock, and unfortunately, we're still living this. However, at the same time, it's a moment of pride for us as Palestine. I'm very proud of every person and any person standing in solidarity with Palestine who's trying to do anything in order to challenge the Israeli Zionist narrative, and also calling for ceasefire, and not only ceasefire, but also ending the occupation, and also ending any support and financing to the Israeli terrorism. And we hope that this path of pain, like the Dolorosa, is going to be the next step, or the step taking us towards our liberation. I'm Lama Amru. I'm the CEO of Build Palestine. We are here trying to rebuild Palestine, especially after what's been going on. Build Palestine is a Palestinian organization established 7 years ago in order to address a question worldwide. For anyone who's asking this question, how can we support Palestine? From the very first day, we have focused on showing people how, or giving advocacy to the organization, Palestinian organizations, to address the needs of Palestinian people in order for us to support them, in order to ensure that these organizations have sustainable plans and long-lasting efforts. We used to use such as collective fundraising, which would allow people to depend on support of people without any hidden agendas. So ever since we started 7 years ago, in addition to our work in public funding or collective funding, we were trying to work with entrepreneurs who are there to find solutions, creative solutions, in order to help their society, in order to solve the problems of the Palestinian community, some of the problems that the Palestinian community faces. We understand that these are the cornerstones of any organization, which is fundraising. We totally understand that we won't be able to have sustainable programs and projects unless we have sustainable funding. And therefore, we decided to ensure that our annual Palestinian conference or webinar every year is dedicated towards, or we decided to dedicate our annual webinars for reclaiming funding, in order for us, because we believe that we need to have sustainable projects, because the sustainable projects would ensure that we have sustainability ongoing. On the 7th of October, we had to cancel postpone Build Palestine conference, in which we have totally changed it. It has become a series of webinars because we totally believe in reclaiming funding is the most needed issue right now. Why? Because after the 7th of October, we saw several declarations from donors, whether it's to end any funding or to add more conditions, although it was preconditioned to begin with. So we realized that this is a way for Palestine to control the situation or take put their hand over, because Palestinians are suffering from this. So therefore, today we are focusing on this. Why are we where we at today as Palestinian? And how did that affect our work and even the values of the Palestinian community? What happened after October 7th? What are the previous or lessons learned that we've had in the past, and how could we take it from the future? What should we do now, and how should we act now? How can we all stand collectively, shoulder to shoulder, as civil society organizations? We have several panelists who have expertise in reclaiming funding in Palestine. I would like to introduce you to our speakers, starting by Ms. Dua Iqrea, who is from PNGO, and it's the democratic civil society organizations who are there to support Palestinian society to ensure democracy and social justice, a sustainable development. Ms. Zadat has over 27 years of experience in working contact and project management, and Ms. Zadat has a master's degree in business from Bir Zeit University. We also have Ms. Suhair Asad. She is in Rawa, which is she leads the advocacy at Rawa. And they have. She's also the co-director of Funding Freedom Project. Seher received a master's degree in international human rights law and from the University of Notre Dame. Again, she has a master's degree in international human rights law from the University of Notre Dame. And we have Mr. Mu'tasim Zayed, who has a master in community development in politics and economics. He has worked in civil society organizations for over 20 years' experience. In addition to that, he also works as an executive director for several civil society organizations. And currently, he works as a consultant and trainer in the areas of governance, financing, and development with a group of international and national institutions. Anyone who has a question, please add your questions into the Q&A box. And if you would like to be more interactive, please use the chat box. This webinar is going to be recorded and it's going to be uploaded to the Build Palestine website. In order for us to start with our discussion, I believe it's very important for us to understand the history or a background of how all this started and what's the impact, the negative impact of this on Palestine. I'll start with Mrs. Suhair. If you can please give us a description or an overview of the situation prior to October 7th and how did it impact Palestine negatively. Thank you, Lama, and thank you, Build Palestine, for preparing this webinar and organizing it despite the dire situations that we're going on, especially because what we're going on, we really need to focus on and review what's our role as Palestinian organizations and how we could review everything that's relevant to the funding with all the powers involved. This did not start on October 7th, as we all know, and the declarations and statements made by organizations did not start on the October 7th. We all know that funding altogether, whether they're sustainable development organizations, whether the EU, the United States, or any other organization, or various forms of funding, in the beginning, they were trying to ensure that Palestinians' politics and the liberation of Palestinian and all its infrastructure, which was through the unions, syndicates, as well as group work, to ensure that it would be moved towards NGOs and civil society organizations, which make the liberation into classifications and fragments the whole effort, and ensuring that we do not have any, that we strip them from being political or from having any liberation effects. The question is not only what are the conditions that they have given us, the question is broader than that. This whole system, this whole matrix, how did it change the Palestinian liberation track and pathway, and where is that taking us? Those who are ending their funding, whether it's the Swiss or Swedes or Germans, how does that different? These countries who are providing weapons, not only in Gaza, but through the history of Palestine, they have always been supporting arming Israel. So whether on one hand they were giving weapons to Israel, on the other hand they were giving us with rebuilding Palestine, or kind of giving us anesthesia just to let us out accept the situation. The Palestinian situation is moving, whereas we're moving from liberation from occupation, they're just beautifying this occupation or reforming it in best case. And I believe this has clearly been reiterated, whereas the Palestinian organizations have been begging them for just one stance. You cannot just say, give us condemnation on one hand, on the other, you're funding them or providing them with arms. What we have been begging for in the past, it just a few hours or a few days, they would make a stance. However, others have, this is reiterating that they have never believed in us. And we see how funding is affecting this. Even the organizations that believe that they are helping us, we have been tricked. They took us away from liberation from occupation to others who are not only in Palestine. This is happening worldwide. All the South-South countries or the oppressed countries, whether looting their natural resources, looting their natural resources, as well as affecting certain ethnic groups, trying to make them have internal fragmentation, internal problems. And someone in the States would give us a theory of change in the United States. How do we deal with this in the Palestinian society? What are the strategies that we can use? What are the strategies? For years, we have accepted to receive organization from those who would say, I accept to help certain parts of you, such as in the West Bank, but not in Gaza. This time, we need to stand in front of the mirror and really confront ourselves. It's not to actually condemn ourselves, but it's more of to see how did this affect us. We have accepted to take some funding for gender, however, knowing that we would have funding for other things which are a red line to us, or considered a red line in our opinion. And some people who are allowing us to limit what we're allowed to say or not to say. And actually, we're in a sarcastic situation right now, whereas some organizations are using theory of getting rid of occupation, theories to build the society, and others would say, I want to support social change. And at the end, we realize that all these discussions are done just within the halls. Nothing is happening. When Palestinian people are trying to lift their heads up, or if Palestinian people are trying to make a decision or trying to move forward towards their towards ending their occupation, this whole system altogether, starting with development organizations or foundations who claim to be progressive, immediately they would start having the collective punishment against us. And maybe October 7th is a good thing for us to look at as a stance of what's going on. What I'm trying to say is that all this did not start on October 7th. For years, we have been talking about conditional funding. And the question is not just conditional funding. The question is how, for all these years, how was this money used as violence on which was affected on liberation movement? This was violence against the liberation movement, which has made us people fighting over crumbs of funding. Our people are facing mass massacre, the atrocities that we're seeing of our children being buried under rubble, and the funders and donors in a disgusting manner. They have hatred towards Palestinian speeches, They hate Muslims. They hate anyone who's not white. So we're back to white supremacy ages. So we're thinking, what should we do with the grant? Should we return it? Should we keep it? What should we do with our salaries? We should ask our questions, which social what did we build through the civil society? And are we ready to let go of all the privileges? Are we ready to start again to become infrastructure for liberation movements? And we'll continue to talk about this later on. We're going to get to that. We're going to get to what are the steps that we should provide in the future. But I would also like to give us a historical context to what has been going on. Mrs. Dot, how do you believe, what's your view or overview of funding in Palestine? I agree with Suhail on certain issues, and I believe that this was something that did not just start recently. It has been since the Oslo Accords, and prior to Oslo, we have civil society organizations working. At the time, they were organization working either voluntarily or that's prior to the Palestinian National Authority. However, after the Palestinian National Authority, we cannot say that we have unconditional funding. I believe funding altogether was found for specific objectives, whether we start from the history since the Madrid Convention and the Oslo Accords, and ever since it was funding relevant to the peace process to take its path and to allow Israel to be one way or another infiltrate the region. And if we were to take a look on things prior to the Oslo Accords, these civil society organizations used to work by having like more social contacts where they used to work in different structures, different than the current structures that we have. There was more interactivity between them and the audience or the public that they used to serve, and they used to raise the voice of the public. So they were free from all the limitations that they have of civil society organizations nowadays, whereas now they spend so much time on reports and paperwork and the issues that or topics that we are supposed to address, compared to in the past just addressing the voices of the people. So now in the past it was more interactive. There used to be organizations, a charitable organization, of course, and voluntarily work such as the unions for charitable organizations, as well as those who used to work part of the Ottoman mandate and also followed through working in the Jordanian mandate. However, some organizations which were formed based on this, they started getting involved in funding. Funding has deterred us from the objectives that we've had in the past. They've tried to overshed the funding prospect to ensure that this is not a political funding. However, any country that does provide any funding or donates any money has their own objectives. After the Oslo Accords, things shifted towards developing state institutions, and the civil society organizations have become not a service provider as they have been pa as they've been in the past prior to the arrival of the Palestinian National Authority. Those who were providing health sector services, they used to do so, or educational services used to do so. Now the services became, now we have public institutions, ministries should be the main provider. And what we do is to provide oversight of these public institutions and ministries providing the services. So the whole matrix has moved from liberation into something else where we interact with what's all being imposed on us and what's actually the de facto what we have now. And what the civil society organizations have done so far, one way or another, they have been involved in developing the laws and providing oversight for that. They have been involved in policies. and they do not provide services except for the areas which are as Area C, and areas which are part of the Oslo Accords, the three areas that we are allowed to provide service providers where the Palestinian National Authority is unable to access. And the other part is part of the international law, which was set based on the aspect that we provide oversight of the services, and we work on that basis. And at the end, after the 7th of October, we realized that this is just we are just recipients. The South-South countries are be have imposed types of donors, and those some people are like basically we have as scapegoats. There are two types of people, some who are above the law and who are those are that are below the law. Prior to the October 7th, we didn't realize that there was so much discrimination against us. The October 7th has actually removed the blindfold from our eyes, and we can see this well. And also, the donors who are supporting the government and supporting the Palestinian National Authority are the same that are supporting the civil society organizations. So we all have the same framework. We're all working under the same framework, whether it's governmental or civil society organizations. However, now on, we're thinking about what's next after October 7th, and we need to focus on that and shift our focus on that. Our previous analysis were many on how could we get rid of this matrix, how could we find an alternative? However, after October 7th, after everything became clear to us, after we have two sides that where the world has been divided into two sides, those who are fully supportive of the Zionism, to be exact, and the other side who are supporting the people who have no rights, supporting now all the rights have been obliterated. So the motives have just evaporated. After October 7th is what we really need to think collectively. What do we do next? After 7th of October, this allowed people to see a new culture, which people see these things totally differently than it used to be in the past. I believe we all fell into the trap of what happened in the past, whether it was a mistake or not. We all fell into that trap. We all followed through. We all used the structures and the policies that we were given in terms of funding. Some of them who were aware of what's going on, and those who are not aware of what this was taking us, the techniques that are trying to push us away from liberation, and the policies that are dry, kind of keeping us busy for a while. Some of us who were trying to get as much as possible in order to make things work, and I'm not sure if they have succeeded or not, but this requires us to really have a civic dialogue to really call things as they are, and to ensure do civil society organization continue to keep their the way they work, or should we actually impose what we want as civil society organizations instead of just being recipients? And this needs us to have an open heart-to-heart talk, and we need to have transparency among us, and we really need to be self-critique, to really actually stand in front of the mirror for ourselves and be honest with ourselves. So we need to have collective decisions and finding new methods of funding, and to see to classify things, who's with us and who's against us, who's really trying, who wants us to exist, and who wants to wipe us out of existence to begin with, and who's really interested in liberation. Thank you, Dad. Now we'll move to what happened on October 7th and after October 7th. Mu'tasim, I would like to hear from you if you would like to add on the context or the background of the Palestinian funding. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Lama. Thank you, Build Palestine, for organizing this. This webinar is coming at a moment where we are kind of caught between our feelings of sadness of what's going on to our people in the Gaza Strip, and also how we internally feel that we honestly were unable to face many of the concepts that, whether we were aware or unaware, that we're actually paying the price for it nowadays, right now. As civil society organizations in Palestine, as you well know, It's not just a civil society that was born after Oslo. Actually, we had civil society organizations since the early century. It's part of our social and economic movement. They have done so much culturally and socially, like any other Arabian society. And these organizations were very active during the British Mandate, and they were also part of the resistance movement against the British Mandate. And when the Palestinian National Authority was established, civil society organizations have become associations or non-governmental organizations, and civil society organizations started to represent the social aspect of the Palestinian liberation, and they played a role in the first Intifada in supporting people and supporting their resilience in order to face the Israeli practices against them in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, as well as Jerusalem. After the Oslo Accords, we have entered a new zone. Prior to Oslo Accords, the civil society organization, most of them at least, were not dependent on how legal they are by having the laws and legislations that the Israeli or occupation played their role. They had their legitimacy from the popular legitimacy. Their legitimacy came from the people. They used to work voluntarily. They used to work from a patriotic perspective, and part of them, they were part of the liberation. So they received their legitimation from that. However, after the Oslo Accords, there's a new system, whereas you need to have associations law, and now you need to have the international donor and funding process. For donors and international organizations, after the Oslo Accord, they call it the market, funding market, as if they actually opened a new, they ventured into a new market. Like anyone who has something to sell or services to provide, they saw that Palestine is a lucrative market. Many of our organizations are there. They found a situation for them to receive big chunks of funding and to be part of the peace process. And as you well know, as my colleagues have mentioned, the overall work of civil society organizations after Oslo Accord was to support peace process between Israelis and Palestinians. There's no funding at all that was out of this context, except very few. And therefore, we have become part of this game. And I'm not sure if any of you are aware of this. I'm sure some of us are aware. We really need to be transparent here. Some of us really know that this was the funding. Funding played a major role in giving new types of privileges. It created new spaces for civil society organizations. And some of us have seen that with the funding, we can, through these funding, we can benefit in creating building the sorry institutions, the governmental institutions and ministries, and ensuring that the Palestinian people who left the Intifada extremely exhausted, and that we needed to regenerate their support. However, the Palestinian National Authority and Abu Ammar, may his soul rest in peace, they realized that the Americans are not going to support us. Then I'm talking about main paradigm shifts. In 1999, and with the beginning of the Second Intifada, and the civil society organizations regenerated their position in terms of funding, since the civil society has denied us then. And denied us justice then. So therefore, we should have not continued to play the game with them. I believe this is one of the problems that we have faced, that we did not stop it then. We should have taken a stance then. We should actually take lessons learned and not fall into the same trap again. We need really need to understand that we don't go through the same vicious cycle. When the Second Intifada occurred, the civil society organizations also faced major challenges. After 11th of September 11th, there's a new definition of terrorism. Now there's something new. Now civil society organizations are supposed to condemn terror. And they should give the list the names of those who are beneficiaries and so on. In addition to the peace process between Israelis and Palestinians, now we have terrorism, where is the United States wants to make sure that it has its hands all over it, or control all over it, where they define the terminology of terrorism. And therefore, now we have entered a new phase. And let's take another phase after that, which is the Palestinian political divide. When the Palestinian political internal divide happened, then the civil society organization had become polarized or of what's going on between the Gaza Strip and here. So now the donors have added more roles onto our shoulders or more burden onto our shoulders. So it's clear that after Oslo Accords, the civil society organizations work what with all its powers and have shifted from liberation to the pathway that was decided for them by the donors. United States have their own agenda, EU has their own agenda, and each of the countries within the EU have their own agenda. Even the Arabian and Islamic funding, which used to be a bigger share in the past, however, it was not organized. They still had their own agendas, and Palestine got lost with all that. And I believe this, we have lost our identity as civil society organizations. Are we actually national civil society organizations or Palestinian, just to register ourselves a Palestinian? Now they have made us, we need to register what is a civil society organization according to law no article number one of the year 2000, or the unions, or the this or that. They have made us lose our own identity by identifying a different definition for our terminology of who we are as a civil society organization. Many of the donors are actually are those who are registered in accordance to article number one of the year 2000. And then afterwards, there's the non-governmental organization that came into contradiction. Is this part of the civil society organization or not? So they have taken us away from what we all know, the traditional definition of civil society organizations, and they've put us into pathways where they're unable to know them anyways. They're unable to decide that. So, and not only our not only the technical aspects and financial aspects, no, they actually defined who are allowed to take funding, and those are sometimes we do give unions and syndicates, and other times we do not. So sometimes we want to support the networks, so, and others we don't. So now it's become something that's at the discretion of the donor, and that's the major problem that we have been facing so far, and our relationship with the government as well. It's a different issue. The role of civil society organizations during occupation, whereas they should have the role of national rebellion. However, they have made us believe that there is a government, there is a country or a state, and we are here to influence the policies and have oversight over policies as if we're living in a natural state, and we do have a norm. This was just a facade. There's no such thing as development under occupation. There's no such thing as general policies under occupation, because at the end, if you're building on one hand, someone else is actually destructing it on the other. And the rule was, and the major problem was prior to October 7th, way prior to that, when the Palestinian political divide took place, when things become polarized, we have lost many of the democracy rights that we've had, such as our right to decide and our right to elections. The civil society organization should have actually set their foot down. Even when there were conditions between ourselves, we should have took a stance, and we should have reviewed this funding and the role of the funding. What's most important is we should discuss that. So this is the tool that we use in order to accept the or to work on the agendas that we have. And therefore, I believe that civil society organizations nowadays, with the stances that we've seen from the world after October 7th, we are paying the expense of not being able to have one unified voice for the Palestinian people altogether. There was a political not only a political divide in Palestine, but also the civil society has had their own divide, and therefore the donors are having their divide as well. If the civil society was able to have a unified voice in the past for all their work, then we would have been able to receive stand to make stances and stand our grounds for various social and national aspects that are affecting our lives. This is one of the things that I wanted to add in addition to what my colleagues Soher and I have added. Thank you, Marta Sam. And I would like to also add that we, as the 90s, the millennium generation, we have just recently been into this. We did not have this context, or we didn't understand all this aspect. I was talking to someone since 2021, since the Intifada took place, we started. We never used these terminology. We used to have the society, whereas we used to speak the language. Just now we realized and understood what's going on. We realized that this is something that's just not stable. It was something that collapsed all of a sudden. I would like to add to what they've said. Since the 80s up until now, we're talking about the 80s because it didn't start in the 80s, but in the 80s, the first intifada happened, and what's prior to the first intifada. In the very beginning of the 80s, we used to talk about civil society organizations and how to have a voice for these civil society organizations and to support them one way or another. Afterwards, it became the dialogue of religion and cultures, and they focused on that. And then thirdly, afterwards in the millennium, it changed to human rights based, and maybe it was previously, but it was more dominant than democracy, transparency, integrity, and so on. And nowadays, in order for us to shift the direction of human rights, to have the human rights approach go up and have the terrorism go down. And that did not take place. Nowadays, if you look the culture and how what they believe as donors, they want to have these funds to work on anti-terrorism, and they did not focus on human rights. So it's very important for us to understand how this is built on in order for us to know how to capitalize on this, to see what type of funding are we going to receive, which is going to be there for anti-terrorism activities and to ensure the security and safety and the whole idea of human rights-based approach. In the past, it's just going down the drain nowadays. And after October 7th, of course, what we've seen in terms of the policies, the statements and declarations of the countries which have supported human rights in the past, who have actually established the fundamentals of having international laws, including the international humanitarian law, they are the same countries who are moving towards something else, which is the double standards, which they're moving towards anti-terrorism and so on. And now they have linked funding to that. So us not understanding how from the 90s things have came down to where we are today, this is not allowing us to capitalize correctly on what we should do in the future. So we clear that if we see these stances clearly and we see the types of funding that we've had and the different discourses that were taking place in the past and now where we're moving towards the future on towards moving towards anti-Semitism and anti-corruption and anti-terrorism and so on. Since we have reached where we're at now, we'll move to the second question. October 7th, what happened? What happened since October 7th? October 7th has actually revealed, or many of the masks fell, and we see clearly the faces behind them. And I would like to give you an overview prior to October 7th. There was some preliminary work on this. Did we actually realize it then or not? I just wanted to shed a light on this. It's very clear for many parliaments in terms of Europe, most of the parliaments in Europe are parliaments, right-wing parliaments, and we can say they're radical right-wing as well. And prosecuting civil society organization prior to October 7th was trying to link them to anti-Semitism, to anti-terrorism, and also persecuting organizations that have stances. They were always persecuted because many of the taxpayers, which were receiving this funds from them, they used to request this for a list of activities that we provide. So therefore, they have prepared us for what's after October 7th, is that we need to show where the funds are being paid. So all the countries were clear. They're trying to give cover to protect the Israeli government to attack and conduct all the atrocities against the Gazan people. So now donors want to add more conditions to what the conditions that they previously had. Now they need to work on anti-Semitism and anti-terrorism, and they want to actually put us into this framework. So therefore, some of the countries have actually ended their funding under the pretense of they need to review the programs, the funding programs they have after October 7th, and they have informed many of the organizations of their intention. And unfortunately, these countries who are supposedly part of the international and humanitarian framework for donating, such as the Swiss Development Agency, has ended. Germany has ended its funding as well. And you see, it's linked to the countries who are providing aid to Israel. And now we are going to see how the United States is going to be part of the part of this framework, where they're going to have a clear framework of funding under clear conditions. Also, the French, the Swedes, and also some of the civil society organizations are continuing to receive letters from them or statements saying that we're suspending your funding for the time being up until we're able to come back to you with new conditions or until we can review what's going on with your project's activities and what we want to provide donorship for or not. And the EU, up until now, they made a statement. However, none of the organizations have received any letters or anything. However, now we can see them all lining up on who are you providing these funds for and for what. And in this case, what's next is what we need to focus on, what Mu'tasam has mentioned. This was predominated in the past. Some people felt that this is going to happen, or they had an believe that it might happen. So, based on what I've seen in the past, I think we're going to have new conditions and terms for the any funds we're going to receive in the future. In line with the solidarity and the sympathy that we're receiving from the people, not the governments, some governments which are allies, we are supposed to have a Palestinian stance, not only by the civil society organizations, which are consider themselves NGOs. We also need to include the unions, not just us. We need to include even the unions. The syndicates are taking, each are receiving funds from a different place. However, at the end, we're coming back at the same resources, providing the funds for everyone. So now on, we really need to think from a nationalistic perspective, a patriotic perspective. We need to find alternatives, and we need to really stand on any preconditions for funding. We have the right to hold them accountable for providing cover and providing solidarity for Israel, for the attacks and atrocities they've conducted against Gazans. We should refuse to have any conditions, anything within the humanitarian and international human rights and part of the international human law. So the role of the civil society organizations now, it has a bigger role in terms of supporting and helping the survivors and the people who have been affected by what's going on in Gaza, and also the international organizations, which quote unquote they call themselves humanitarian. They also, one way or another, they actually retreat. They're not in Gaza anymore. They retreat their steps. We also need to think from a national perspective, from the Palestinian capital, the Palestinian resources, the Palestinian private sector, and how could we include them to become part of this? We're going to get to the alternatives in a bit. I want to dedicate the end of this session for the actions and the alternatives that we could have in order to ensure that our discussion would be the very first step towards our unity. Seher, what's your take on this? Honestly, Dua has covered many of the stances, but I would like to disagree
I don't believe that we did not understand things prior to October 7th. We as Palestinians understand this context very well. I believe that we're not ready to pay the expense. I'm just being very honest. Since we are in front of a historic moment here, we should not beat around the bush. We should not say that we were surprised. Those who are, I'm a person who works in international advocacy for years, not only in funding. And I remember clearly our meetings with these organizations, whereas Israel is conducting massacres, although we're in front of an unprecedented mass massacre, this is not the very first time that we face such attacks. We have seen this in the past. And at the time, the same organizations then, not only were they requesting us to bring down the ceiling or stop calling for liberation, they also work on fragmenting us in 1948 Palestinians and those who are in diaspora are not part of our work, and West Bank and Gaza and Jerusalem, and fragmentizing us. They're saying, do not hold Israel accountable. You're not allowed to hold Israel accountable. You're not allowed to talk about the siege that Israel is doing. You're not allowed to boycott Israel. It's the same statement. Maybe their words are like at a higher dose. Maybe they're actually being more clear about what they're saying, but I think nothing is new. And if we want to be honest with ourselves, what we're facing today as organizations, civil society organizations, we are being extorted and exploited. This is calling us to compromise and to accept these policies. And this did not come from nothing. This is part of an international economic matrix, as the international powers and the links between them and their own policies and politics internally for them. Those who are saying that they want to suspend the funding, let's look at the progressive funds. Those who are issuing statements as if it's calling for ceasefire, just like a make-believe ceasefire. What are they saying? Are they actually putting the context on what's going on in Palestine since the 1948 catastrophe up until today? Do they talk about the ethnic cleansing and the oppression? Or are we today at one point, just cease the fire now and in the and then take us back to within the framework of international funding and let's beg money for the people in Gaza? What's Gaza teaching us? It's teaching us lately in Gaza. Honestly, we have all fell into the trap of funding, whether the concepts, whether the terminology, such as individualistic, being competitive. The change was not just of how we work, even the culture of work. I agree with Mu'tasim on what he said. I second what he said, how we understand this. These organizations did not start in Oslo, as Mu'tasim said. They were there in the past. But let's see what are the new concepts that they have introduced us. And now service provision. What's service provision? Why should institutions in a liberation in a country that needs liberation, why did we ever agree to work as service providers? Are we working with the people to liberate ourselves, or are we actually just service providers for these people? Do we want to make it gender and agriculture and culture and work on different classifications? Or do we understand what it is to be in a liberation movement and what's our role in all this? And if I were to say, what do we need right now? I'm not sure. No one has ever talked about funding. We have talked about funding and we had several initiatives, but I have never seen, it's not how to understand the scene. We fully understand the scene. The question that we really need to address, do we want to or do we not want to? And I agree with that, not only in NGOs, unions, and syndicates, and whether civil society organization, we really need to address the question. Now, this segment of the society who's working for reform within occupation, are they willing to pay the expense? Yes, there is an expense. We're going to lose this funding, and we need to redress the way we work. There's war against Palestinian people, not only by Israel, it's by other countries, by other donor countries, by international organizations who claim to be progressive. Those who are using human rights as a pretense. We as Palestinians need to highlight, what do we need? What does the liberation in Palestine requires? We're going to call this the resources. Resources extend beyond funding. We as individuals, as societies, all the capabilities that we have in Palestine. And I disagree. It's true that we all fell into the trap of funding, but there are some examples in Palestine who are creating a different type of work. And we think we should learn from them. I believe now we should have a collective clear stance. Our organization who have funds from the EU, are they going to return that money and say we have a clear stance and we don't want this money? Or do we want to just give a stance or a position paper and continue to receive funds for that and accept the price that we pay? Are we over the facade of what's saying that we take funds, but with this money we are actually impacting something? We are unable to impact anyone or anything. The only way to have an impact is to, even in terms of international solidarity, we come back again to having interactive relations with international liberations in South-South. Those who are oppressed for years, they are the ones who are actually standing in the street, standing in support of Palestine and in solidarity for Palestine. Or should we always continue to beg the polarized countries? We need to have clear the internet that Palestinian organization should stop and refuse any funds which have the Gazans' blood on it. We should redefine funding altogether. Who do we see ourselves as a infrastructure for a liberation movement? How can we take a collective stance where no one is left behind like the past? And this brings us back to the EU discussion in the past. Some people who are accepting and some who are receiving the punishment on their own. Should we accept that? Should we accept to allow them to continue to put some organization into bankruptcy and continue to fund those who are willing to work with their conditions? Or should we all have one clear stance, collective stance of Palestinians? What do we want from ourselves? Who are we ready to partnership with? There are different types of solidarity and partnership. What are the conditions that we have for these partnerships? And it's not a position paper. It's not just discussions. It's just not talking. We need to talk the talk and walk the walk. We really need to look at some organizations who were able to retrieve funding, organizations who fully suspended their relations. And this is very important for us to highlight this, but we need to do this collectively. And when we think collectively, no one can exploit us, not with salaries, not with projects, not with anything else. In order to create a project, I would need millions of dollars. There's something that we need to shift and change. Should we go back to the traditional and conventional way of working as Palestinian people? We have our own wisdom. We were able to work in the past. We should be able to do so instead of waiting for another genocide and waiting for us to say that we're surprised again. I believe we're over that by now. We learned our lesson. I hope that we did. Matasim, the question is to you that would take us to the alternative solutions. What should we do now? In order to have a collective statement where no one is left behind. I also see some questions, such as the public statements for other organizations. And how could we take it from here? Thank you, Lama. I would like to pinpoint an issue. Let's link things together. Even prior to October 7th, there's an issue that we all know. Donors used to allow the Israeli occupation to receive more funds and more. We know that if they were giving, for instance, USAID, if they give $1 to Palestinians, they give 10 to the Israelis. Not only the Americans, the Germans, the French, all of them. So not only that they were supporting them military-wise, even the social and cultural and economic support that they were giving, the same way that they're giving us, the same tool that they're giving us, they're giving them. We should have paid attention that such a way of dealing with us is not going to ever get us to any justice or any equilibrium. they're always going to be more advanced and more progressive than we are. So that's going to create a problem and a difference for us. Also, the civil society's organizations accepting the administrative and financial terms and conditions, that has actually created issues for us. When the monetary department, the monetary authority was getting involved in how are we able to open the civil society organizations, now we're unable to have collective funding, such as what you do or fundraising, as Build Palestine is doing. Lots of terms and conditions have actually limited our alternatives. After October 7th, the question is not what do they want. Let them do whatever they want. What we're requested right now is to have a position, to make a decision. What's my decision? Without having any ethics or any morals. How can I actually create development? How can I help people? So therefore, it's an issue. This is what I believe. We need three main steps in order for us to learn lessons learned and not fall into the trap again, and not to go into an emotional stance where we just talk about things at the spur of the moment and then things will calm down afterwards. We need to ensure that we continue to have momentum. The very first time, the very first thing that we need to do, all the civil society organizations should let go of all the funding or free themselves from all the funding relevant to the Oslo Accords. That's over. That is something that we've tried. It's not working. It started since the 1993, 1994, and this has proved itself a failure. It's unable to meet any of the needs or any of the aspirations of the Palestinian people. And therefore, that's it. Continuing to do so, meaning that you're continuing to waste time. And therefore, we need to step out of this cycle and find an alternative. We should all, as civil society organizations, to work together by finding a new way to stand in solidarity with Palestinian people and their rights, which is the solidarity, the real solidarity with our people, with our rights as Palestinian people, our historic rights, our tragedies and catastrophes, whether from a national, Arabian, Christian, whatever perspective that we want to have solidarity with us and recognition of our rights, historical rights. This is the basic minimum that we should, the bare minimum that we should start from. Not just not allow the donors to impose their terms and conditions. No, we need to say that you want us to receive your funds. You need to recognize our right to self-determination, our right to life. Today, our demands have went down to the to just allowing our children to live, not their right to health or education. It's just their right to live. And therefore, this is something that we need to work on. This is something that we need to have profound discussion through committees, through giving ourselves a specific transfer or transition period, 3 to 6 months from today. Through this 6 months, we need to all have a clear view of our new perspective, what we need to do as civil society organization to have a clear framework. We call upon our partners, the people standing in solidarity and allies with us. Anyone who accepts our terms of reference, let them be. Whether they're international organizations work in Palestine or not. Those who are from Palestine, Palestinians, non-Palestinians, individuals, even private sector. Anyone who accepts this, then let them work with us. Those who do not accept, it's up to them. Let them continue to work and on their own. However, giving the freedom to everyone work to whoever they are, to whatever they want, that's also questionable. Now it's not acceptable. It's not acceptable for any civil society organization to have a decision on their own in terms of fundings. This conditional funding is not the right of individual organization. After over 10,000 martyrs and with over 2/3 of them women and children, they don't have the right to make that decision. Palestinians have the right, even in Jerusalem, West Bank, none of the organizations are allowed to. So as civil society organizations say, oh, we're free. We whether we want to take funds or not, it's not up to them. It has to be channeled through one way, through having a nationalistic view where all these civil society organizations would be blacklisted if they do otherwise. If they take funds from anyone who sets any preconditions, they should be isolated from the society. No one should work with them. They should be boycotted. If we're unable to do so, then we're going to find the donors are going to find many of the civil society organizations who are going to be willing to work with them and to do it under the table and to continue working with alternatives. The same way that they have actually pushed us into the corner through funding, we should push them into the corner. The civil society organization and everyone working part of this, they should be ready to pay the expense. Not only Gaza is supposed to pay, not only the children of Gaza should pay the expense. We should all support them and help them to get rid of this damn occupation. How are we going to get rid of the occupation? How are we going to go get rid of occupation and Oslo Accords and all the everything that came down with it and get back to the liberation? We need to have three main aspects. We have a new framework in solidarity with the Palestinian historical rights. We need to create, secondly, I'm also not only by returning just the money to these organizations, I'm with actually going into legal litigation with them. Why should we return the money to them? We have contracts between us and them. We should review the contracts by legal, any whether in the United States, in the EU, to find loopholes in these contracts that allows us to actually sue them for ending the... By what right did you actually end and suspend? You want me to condemn my own people? This is very important for us to use. We need to find litigation. Instead of returning the money to them, we should actually sue them for suspending the funds that they provided us with. Just to give them a headache. Let's give them a headache. So don't feel that they have the right to give us money whenever they want to, and whenever they want to, they just take it back. It's our right. If their laws allow us to do so, let's use it. And therefore, we can create the framework that we want with the blacklisting them and with this lawsuit that we can hold. Anyone who is willing to go back to being the slaves of funds, then they should be boycotted. We need to actually step away and step out of our same mistakes. Thank you, Martelson. You talked about our alternatives and what we should do. I would like to get back to you, Dua, and for you to tell us what are the alternatives, whether it's in terms of resources of funds, and as we say, we can do so much with so little. So resources is not just about how much, it's about the quantity, the quality of what we have. How can we actually ask for help from the resources that we have, from people who are in solidarity with Palestine? How can we do so and help us help ourselves without being dependent on funding? I agree with Martasim on the three points that he've listed. Although we have discussed this in the past, this is controversial among civil society organizations. Everyone, I believe, is getting to a point of enlightenment. In terms of having a movement, it's not just a national liberation. It's just not a national liberation from occupation, but also liberation from funding. Today, there was a meeting. And I believe the alternatives that we have and we need to strip ourselves away from the culture that was imposed on us. Nowadays, in terms of the changing the narrative that are taking the side of Palestinian solidarity. It's based on voluntarily basis, not a paid aspect. This is very important for us to highlight and see. This shows that we need to have cooperation and support, because the Palestinian narrative currently should continue in the same momentum that it started now, and with voluntarily efforts and support, and not with paid efforts. And then, because anything paid is going to impose some terms and conditions on us. This is very important and very clear for us. And the organization, not only the civil society organizations, but also the community in as a whole. Also the language that we use. And this brings us back to what's available right now, or what's going on, sorry, in Gaza right now. What's going on in Gaza, out of everything that you see from the people, it's just the culture. It's the culture that we should learn from them. We should learn from Gaza how, despite everything that they're going, they're losing their homes, they're losing their children, losing everything that they ever owned, but they still have social cohesion. They're working together. And we need to get back to them, because they are creating what, because we're there to raise their voice. We're there to be the voice of the people, not what I want or what my donor wants. It's a very important to go back to the grassroots. So it's something that we should be raised on. We should learn from those in Gaza. We can see through social media, not only through what's going on the grounds in terms of journalism and the media, what we see clearly in front of us. They have the resilience, they have the full conviction and the full belief that we should learn from. We should take that and help us move towards the future. We who thought ourselves progressive, we thought we're living on the other side of the planet, we should actually protect this. We should protect this as part of our culture. It's a national heritage that we have, and we need to protect our social cohesion. Secondly, competition, which has also created us, which also we cannot deny that we do have resources, whether it's individuals, human resources, or financial resources. We have a bunch of both. It could be from very different from different parties, those who do not set any terms or conditions, but however, we need to work on that and develop more of that, and being away from being competitive. We have 50 persons, for instance, working on advocacy and lobbying. If we're all saying the same thing, we're actually just overlapping our work. So we don't need to double the work. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. We really need to create something that's clear. And I don't want to say, I don't want to use the funding, but you have created lots of incubators to support initiatives. How about we create advocacy incubators for advocacy, specialized for advocacy, those who work together and are able to support people and raise the people's voices. If anyone wants to work on advocacy, unfortunately, they overlap and they also work in competitive manner. We need to extract ourselves from that. And as we have mentioned, the same thing for the Palestinian narrative, because the Palestinian narrative is clear. We have a right as Palestinian people to live on our land. We are the indigenous people. We have our right to live here. We have our inalienable rights. This is very important for us to use as the basis of our work. It's important to isolate those two parts in order to have one common language, one common framework for our language, and to have one clear objective, because always, if we set the objective, we're able to achieve it. Otherwise, if we just carry the models, we would never actually achieve anything. It's very important to reiterate that. And the third thing, as I've mentioned, the lessons learned from where we're at today. It's important for us to take this further. I would like to mention, there are lots of other funders that are going to come in. They have different faces, let's say, but they're going to come in. We're going to see different faces who are standing on standby. They're going to give the national facade, but internally you're going to realize they're going to put more set more terms and conditions, and they're going to continue to try to put channelize us in, on administrative paperwork that would take us away from working with our people. I would work on days and just to write a report and get things which could be which I could do instead of actually wasting the time on paperwork. I can actually work with the people for that, and that would reduce our work and the efficiency and effectiveness of our work. In addition to what Martasam has mentioned, I believe that the private sector should be involved, because the private sector, you cannot forget, not all the private sector, some of them are supported by different agendas, and we need to see this clearly. And we need to ensure the full inclusion of the Palestinian liberation. We should also move towards using what we want as our weapons to liberate ourselves and stay away from competitiveness and to stay away from calling others traitors. We should reorganize ourselves, and we should continue to do so, because I've been involved in the very first Intifada, and we used to work in the health sector, and we had no health institutions, and we know who needs the help and who doesn't, who has chronic disease, and we know who's poor and who's not. So that's on one hand that we need to take initiative back. We need to reclaim what we have and what we know, and as our support to providing humanitarian aid to people who actually need it, because we know we cannot depend on anyone, not on the state and not on donors. Now we see the full silence that we have received from the government, which is unprecedented. Everything that you've mentioned is very important, and many have seen, I believe that it's very important for us to create this dialogue for two reasons. For those who are not involved in this work, for those who do not know the details. And I also talk about the new generation that knows nothing about the past and knows nothing that from 1993, we have spent $45 billion in Palestine on development, and we're still under the line of poverty. We're still developing, and we're still a developing country. So it's very important to start from somewhere, and now is the time to give the historic context and ensure that we use them this current moment to create a paradigm shift in the way that we work in. And here I'd like to get back to you, Sahir. What do we do next? What do we need in order to unify our work, and not only to end what we do, not just to be where we're at now, but we want to know what to do in the future, especially now that everyone is enlightened or anyone is being aware of what we've been through in the past. So we're kind of being awakened to what's actually going on. What's the framework that we receive the, I'm not going to call it funding, I'm going to call it support. We need to change the terminology and the concepts that we're using. Are we receiving support in solidarity, or are we receiving support for people who have their own agendas in the background? Do we actually switch EU and American funding for Russian funding? No, that's not what I want. That's not what I'm aiming at. We don't want to see those who have clear agendas to others who have other agendas as well. Let's see how the private sector, are they involved? How are we willing to get capitalistic? Did the private sector bring in capitalistic approach to our country? We need to see, when we talk about unity, I would love to talk about unity. I would like to talk about a unity which is clear. The question today is not to call anyone a traitor. It's not to corner anyone here. The question is, are we ready today to move from a common ground that we reject not only any conditioned funding or support. I'm going to talk about Rawa from my own experience. In the past, there were people who were trying to do something else. In Rawa, we not only refuse and reject any support or funding, even if they say there's no condition, but on their website, they say that Palestine is only Gaza and a website, Gaza and West Bank, they don't include Jerusalem and 1948 and diaspora. Then by that, we just reject their funding altogether. At the end, when they give us funding, then we can say we are able to work on this. I continue to believe that anyone who has blood on their hands, Palestinian blood on their hand, we need to reject and return their funds. It's not about the contracts. We should actually ask ourselves, why do we have contracts and sign contracts with the EU when the EU clearly has terms and conditions relevant to anti-terrorism? And part of this, any kind of discussion that we're going to discuss with them, we actually signed that we are unable to open our mouths or say anything. And if we say something, we would be punished. So all this is part of what do we stand for? Now we're not going to blame ourselves for what has done. What's done is done. Now we're at a paradigm shift that we need to take a decision. The least that we can do is that the funds should be returned and rejected, and we should end and boycott our relationship with these parties. And another thing, when we talk about solidarity and support and solidarity, we have many organizations such as Build Palestine, because money is based on solidarity and individualistic approach. Rawa is also on the same line. We continue to seek on annual basis to increase the support received by individuals, that we do not have any individuals, whether those who are registered or not registered, and those who are working on the grounds without having any priorities, without having specific themes, just to think of a logic that people who want to be part of the liberation, how can we not add bureaucracy and terms and conditions and anything that would add to our oppression as Palestinians? Those who have not ended the support in Palestine, who are in solidarity with Palestine, are they ready to provide different types of support aside from grants and projects? Are they willing to be our partners, real partners, for the organizations and for the groups working in the field on a sustainable basis? And this is not only for us as Palestinians who are asking for this. Are they ready to invest in our independence? This is one of the hardest questions that you can ask a donor or a funder, just to come back and take a step back and say, not only to look at Palestine, but let's look at these big organizations or these family funds. At the end, we all know that the funds or money that they have, at the end, it has the blood of other oppression of other people. Some of them are not Palestinians. Some of them are based on a long history of slavery or exploitation, economic exploitation. Some of them are, up until today, their money is for looting resources or weapons. On some of these organizations who are supporting us, when they're accomplices in this, and many of the people who do not, only they only have 5% of grants. However, 95% of their money continues to stay in the investments of oppression in Palestine or everywhere else, without any accountability. If we're being honest here about asking, how are you standing with us in solidarity? If we ask, support in solidarity should include compensation for the exploitation, for long years of protracted exploitation and resources, are they willing to put money in hands of Palestinians or people or other movements or other nations for us to be the decision makers? We decide, how do we invest on the ground? How do we invest in projects or pathways that would help us in the future to provide us with a sustainable income, or that would not be basically dependent on suspension or dependent on their discretion whether they want to continue to fund us or not? Those who try to invest us to a point, they would say, sorry, you should stand on your own. Now our priority has shifted. We're moving to a different theme or a different topic. We need to be fully independent. Looking at, for instance, Sharaka as a forum or organizations that work on sovereignty of food and environmental justice. They are groups who are trying to play a totally different perspective. They refuse any kind of terms and conditions for any grants or donors or resources. They're collecting resources from individuals. They're trying to have infrastructure which would generate an income for them to be able to support their independence. They're working as a network without any competition. Today they took a stand, and I remember in the popular arts, and I know some of them who have sent letters to the Rosa Luxemburg because they have actually suspended their relations. So therefore, we want to take that initiative. We want to do so. And then in solidarity, we need to identify which type of support we want. Do we want this to be like a droplet that we receive drops of funding and drops of support? Or do we need to stand in solidarity? We have demands for those who are standing in solidarity with us. We set the terms and conditions. We actually ensure that we have resources that would not allow us to even ask for solidarity in the future, because that's also risky. That could also take us into the track of the trick of falling into the trap of funding or being dependent on others. Also, we should not fall into the trap of progressiveness. For example, when you have all these organizations and today they have their stances in solidarity against the genocide in Gaza. They do not even call it genocide, but without having any, they take it out of context. They take it out of context. And when you ask them to make a decision or a demand, we notice that this is not just for Biden and others. We want them to take a decision. We want them to hold them accountable. Would any progressive funder be able to hold accountable the suspension of funds? Do they take that role? Would they accept that? In line with what he has mentioned, what Murtasam has mentioned, it's important for us to also include that after we have a clear stance and after we create the foundation for us to stand on, we need this platform first. We need to create our own common ground. We cannot talk about Rawa before when we first started. We issued a statement. It's about 33 organizations or more from the civil society organization. We said today is a paradigm shift. Today, we need a clear decision. We have the answer today. The answer is us, our own resources, our own capabilities, our own resources, regardless of what resources we have. Well, once we have a clear understanding of what we want, then it would be a lot easier for us to talk to others, even those standing in solidarity with us. So those who are standing in solidarity with us, they need to understand and listen to us. How do we want to continue our struggle for our liberation? And then afterwards, the alternatives would be open to discussion. We don't want to say we want to have projects that would be income generating project, or would that link us to capitalism? This is important for us. It's as Palestinians, how can we get rid of that? If someone is working with international human rights, and I'm a lawyer in international human rights, I'm not sure how to understand that, because there are some parties who are involved in this. We need to think together collectively. But we need to understand that this is part of our liberation pathway. It's very important for us to say, or our liberation journey, and we need to be humble and to learn from lessons learned. I don't want to continue to say that everyone were doing so. There are people who have been working for years to find alternatives. Let's go and ask them, what did you learn from your experience? How did you do so? When I call upon you today, I'm not calling for a small organization to give back the funds and leave their people without any salaries. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying we don't have a real political will to create a rights-based approach, to have collective solutions, and to work collectively by practice, by something clear that we should do, because we do not have the will to say that, no, we don't want to do so. And again, we don't want to go into the vicious cycle of bureaucracy. From an organizational perspective, you mentioned that even the previous experiences, should they lead the way to learn from them, lessons learned, or what? I believe that I'm not going to be delusional. I don't believe that everyone is going to make a stance. Mu'tasim said this clearly. We're going to find people who are willing to take a stance, and there are others who are going to continue, and they're not going to care about what happened so far. You know, sometimes we have the fish memory, and sometimes some people, although they see the bloodshed, they forget about it the next minute. And they're not going to say that this is for Gaza and this is not for Gaza and so on. That's not probably important. This is only for education or children. This is not relevant to the political question. No, we should say everything is relevant to politics. Agriculture is political. Education, work, everything that we do is political. And yes, we need to be humble and we need to learn from those who have been working for years to work in a different perspective without the funding. First of all, we need to have a common ground that we all stand from. We all take the same stance. Not everyone's thinking alone. We should all brainstorm and think together and come to a decision together collectively. How do we protect each other? How do we stand in solidarity with each other? How no one would be left behind or left alone or cornered alone? How can we learn from this? At Rawa, we have visited a village in the West Bank. It's called Farha. There, they have an amazing model and how a whole society supported each other by volunteerism, where they created a work in no organization is able to work there in marginalized areas and living under the line of poverty. How can we make a struggle again? How we take into question who are we today? Who did we leave behind? Where were all the centers of money, centers of power? Where was that? Who was not involved? Unfortunately, what we have, they're able to help us. So yes, I believe that after what's going on, after we're able to create a clear stance and without being stuttering on this, we need to be clear and we need to learn and learn from our mistakes. And we should see how we should take our journey forward. What we're doing now is just the first step. We cannot continue to say the first step of our journey to, for us to use it as an excuse not to, to take a decision. We need to see who's willing to make that shift. And the moment that you make that shift, I believe, I agree. And second, what Mu'tasim has said clearly, those who don't want to be part of our journey are going to let go. Those who are not working in solidarity, and those we are going to boycott them. Our people are going to boycott them. This should be clear from this moment on. Thank you, Sahir. Thank you, Mu'tasim. How about we give the floor to the questions, because I feel that we would like to answer their question. Through answering the questions, we can continue adding to it. We should give them some time because they need to address their questions. Should I answer questions altogether or do you have specific questions? For example, examples about organizations that have rejected the funding and the public statements that many of the organizations could send out, having a situation that everyone... Let's see the questions. There's another question that I would like to include. Some of the alternatives is what we have, for example, which we could boycott. How can individuals... I see that funding, we collect funding or do fundraising from worldwide. In Gaza, it's impossible to have collective funding from anywhere in Gaza. From a moral perspective or ethical perspective, one organization was registered in Canada and the United States. And after October 7th, they were pressured by the payment processors, those who bring them that. Whereas even in the West Bank, they're not allowed if Gaza is mentioned. Even those who have a button that has, or like a tab that has donate on, that would be like a party if they have that. Not all organizations have this access where they can collect that. So anyone who would And how can we benefit from the Palestinian narrative to get rid of the limitations of terms and conditions of funds? We have a common passion here in terms of fundraising. Let's have a clear view of this. This which we need to address many questions. First of all, fundraising collectively, not through just organizations who are supportive, but also if we were to depend on this, and don't forget that most of us have been lost in call for proposals and projects, and we totally lost connection with the people in solidarity with our cause, for our in solidarity with our Palestinian just question. So we really need to redress how to reestablish trust with those in solidarity with us, whether they're individuals or organizations. And as you well know, Lama, in fundraising, whether Gaza or Palestine is boycotted, then there are different ways to do so. There are experts on how to do so, that everything has a loophole. There is nothing that's 100% proof. So we can use these loopholes in order to ensure that we're able to transfer the funds and legally. And you know, we have prior expertise and that even in Gaza. So we can do this again and see the lessons learned and find different solutions. In terms of individual funding, and there's a different also type of funding which we should think collectively on. What are the funds or what are the mechanisms that are able to fund civil society organizations in a different perspective? It's okay to include the private sector. Let's include them in the discussion. Let's include even the government, and that's the Palestinian National Authority. Changing the mandate and otherwise, changing the mandate of funding would actually ensure that these organizations change their mandate. After we do so, let's assume that we are able to create the framework for in solidarity of civil society organizations framework, then definitely that would impose that civil society organizations would have to redefine their mandate and redefine their interventions and redefine the methodologies that they're going to use in work. So as Suhair has mentioned, they have to reinvent themselves altogether. Because if you were to take this as a puzzle and add the old to the new, then it's not going to work. If you're creating a new framework, then you need to regenerate yourself to be able to do so. You need to regenerate these organizations, their mandates, their vision and mission, as well as the methodology, ensure, and also the targeted group, using from a nationalistic holistic national perspective. And then afterwards, we're going to answer the question what are we going to do with individuals, whether internally or within nationwide, and what's from the other or other than that. I'm very optimistic about the Palestinian people. I usually notice when you have a specific campaign and you have 70 to 80% of the funds from the 1948 borders, then I believe that you really believe that we do have the funds. You just need to create, to build the bridges of trust. You need to build trust with them, because I believe if they trust you, they would definitely donate. So we need to see what we can do in partnership with the government, with the private sector, with international organizations who are in solidarity with us, who are accepting of our terms and conditions. And here we're not talking about something that's going to happen overnight, but we need to do this gradually. It has to be done within a clear time frame. We cannot just say we're going to do that later and just leave it, because tomorrow is never going to come. Hopefully the crisis in Gaza is going to come to an end. Hopefully the war is also going to end. It's always easier to go to the past. However, what's easier for us, what's harder for us, is to challenge ourselves and to create the change. We need to start. Anyone who believes in this should start, and anyone who has a conscience and their conscience has been fully It's not that our conscious awakened. Our conscious has always been there. However, in the past, there was nothing that provoked us to the point where we have a moral and ethical obligation to do so. Now we have this moral obligation, and we have this an obligation to our values, that we should stand up for our values and for our ethics and morals to do so. And there are tools for this commitment. You have to understand, in line with the Palestinian law, having any political fund is definitely be resisted, because there are people who would take you back to square one. So you need to use different ways. Having boycott, national boycotting, blacklist is important, and also the legal perspective. You need to sue these people. You need to sue any conditional funds is by the law should be incriminated. As we've mentioned, no one has used this before, although it's there. We can use it, but no one used it. But now we are obliged to do so. Having these committees who are, let's say, legal committees, technical committees, and so on, that's how we can work together to specialize and classify ourselves and work in segments in a whole organized framework. I cannot deny that right now, after the conditional funding, which was mainly dependent or focused on that, that has created for us a difference, some differences, let's say, which has weakened us in another perspective, or which, however, currently, the network, we have internal discourse, and that has started as of October 7th. And unfortunately, I would have loved to have these discourses in the past or prior to that. We've tried to do so. We've tried to create a will for the civil society organizations or something that would move them to do so. But unfortunately, we were unable to prior to October 7th. We wanted to work on things based on our vision, because we have actually had a vision. We've foreseen this. However, currently, there's a serious dialogue on this, and we want to set a framework on our work internally as a network. If you are strong internally, then definitely you would be strong. A strong interior means a strong exterior, and you're able to work with other parties and other stakeholders. We want to set several procedures that would oppose fundings, because now we know that we're going to be tempted with all the funds that we're going to receive after October 7th, and that requires high will and value list that we should have, like to list our moral obligation. What should we accept and what we should not accept, and what we should accept under certain terms and conditions. So we need to work on this internally, on how to work with civil society organizations. I believe that now we are in the awakening phase. We're being enlightened, and due to the current situation, which has provoked us all, and also some of the situations that some civil society organizations were forced into, some of them are creating mechanisms that would actually limit the number of civil society organizations and list and keep only the big organizations, and they give them many privileges, whereas they feel that they cannot let go of these privileges, and that requires lots of will, or like a strong will, to be able to move forward. And what I would like to highlight here as well is that we cannot say that anything would work with us. So I agree with Suhair and I agree with Martasam somewhat, but there are international laws which are there, which are applied to us. Such as terrorism, how they identify terrorism, which puts the country in a catch-22. Where they would be subjected to money laundering claims or allegations, as well as others such as opening bank accounts and other different things. And unfortunately, that was based on different countries who are able to label others as terrorists or being accused of money laundering or being accused of terrorism, and that would deter any kind of funding. So it's not just about a decision that we take and that's it. So it's a will that we need to abandon all the privileges that we have received, or and move and shift all our resources in the direction that we want. And even if we find alternatives for the funding, there would be other challenges. And when Build Palestine first started, I worked with the network on various things just to overcome some challenges that we've had. What helps us is that we can launch our work by changing the public opinion that's changing nowadays, and the people's movement that's moving, because they're the taxpayers. They're actually paying for what the government is doing. So it's a conflict that they would have. So it's a different conflict that, yes, instead they should not put terms and conditions on the funds, on the beneficiaries. The beneficiaries, it's my son or someone else. It's a person who's being affected by the war, regardless, he needs support. He needs to receive the support or the help needed. Thirdly, in the past, there were some cases where some countries supported that in finding an income, for example, generating projects which are income generating projects. However, having these big organizations where these organizations include such income generating projects, such as being institutions as ministries or public institutions, that doesn't help us a lot, because the people being negatively affected from that, being affected by the salaries, all that impacts them. So we need to have anything that would limit. So anything that would limit or restrict us from achieving our goal is something that we should think and consider abandoning in order for us to move forward. Some of the questions, such as, do you have a dialogue at PNGO? Yes, we do. It's a serious dialogue. And of course, some people are in agreements and others are in opposition, but we're still discussing that. And the discussion is serious in terms of rejecting and returning the funds. Yes, we are discussing that as well. And we're discussing the procedures for that. Right now in this meeting, we cannot address all the questions and make decisions and show you the procedures. This discussion should help us or lead us towards a serious step towards moving towards work immediately. As you well know, we have board of directors and others, and maybe my decision as a person is totally different. I can abandon anything and everything that's relevant to funding, but maybe others don't have the same view, because of course they have their own interests. So we need to review that, and we need to give them the floor to assess their situation first. I would like to quickly overview some of the questions that were mentioned. To address that, for various years, those who were holding us accountable were the donors. Those who were identifying or actually defining how loyal we are to our work is the donors, based on their own agendas, how linked they are to Israel, how linked they are to international capital, how linked they are with international agendas, or even the agendas who consider themselves progressive. Those who are standing on top of bigger organizations, they actually care about what's going on in Palestine. They have those who their families have billions, and they are supporting Palestine as progressive parties. We know what their leaders are looking for. So we need to create a shift. Our people today should be the ones holding us accountable. Our people should be the one holding us accountable. And based on the situation that we're living in, and as people, as a nation, we need to ask ourselves, who is Palestine? Where is Palestine? I'm asking in this web, the government. What government are you talking about? Who? The Palestinian National Authority? What does that mean for Gaza? What does that mean for the people living in 1948 and people living in diaspora? Those having We need to actually break free from that. We're not service providers. We're not civil society organizations or syndicates or unions, regardless of what the struggle we are taking on, as long as we're working within the framework of the Oslo Accords and the national theme that the government is working within, that means we're doing nothing. The Palestinian National Authority is an accomplice, first of all, in the massacre and genocide that's happening in Gaza. And they're also an accomplice in the prosecution of people who are tortured and killed. And I have a really a big problem with this. If we're still talking about the same issue, talking about getting back to the same idea of analyzing the reality and seeing what legal framework we have and work within that. There's something that we need to break free from the ceiling. The government is the one that received billions for development for years. On one hand, we see that they give some support to the security that was there for the oppression, for the Palestinian people and killing the resistance in Palestinian people, and having the money to reconstruct what the occupation or the weapons are, what Israel is destructing. When we talk about this, we need to see who's an accomplice and who's involved and who has blood on their hands today. I have a problem for going back to redefine Palestine within the West Bank and Gaza. Even Gaza has been isolated from our definition of how we talk about ourselves as Palestinians. Who pays the expense? Who's carrying the burden of the Palestinian people's struggle? And who's standing in silence? And therefore, I believe we need to break free from this framework. We need to break the glass ceiling. Our people, do we want liberation in Palestine? We want to build it on based on justice, dignity. Do we want to hold accountable anyone and everyone who's involved in our oppression? Or again, do we want to go back to half and half solutions? Do we want to go based on what we're used to instead of staying within our comfort zone? We're going to always be under the oppression of the transfers, the banks, the limitations, and the terrorism block lists, blacklists, and so on. Unless we break free from this, do we have an objective that we can put together? Do we have a long-term objective? We need to stay away from being delusional. Some people would be too delusional and other too realistic. We need to be do we need to have a long-term objective to break free from funding? Do we agree on this or not? If we don't agree, then there's a different pathway. If we do agree, then we need to identify how do we start. That's not going to start overnight. How are we going to do so? First of all, it's going to start by taking clear steps, taking a stance against anyone and everyone who's trying to let us kneel politically, anyone who's trying to change us into people who are compromising on their own blood. We're talking about the international humanitarian law, the public prosecutor of the international criminal law, whereas the government has worked for years just in order to have this. Has anyone heard how did they talk about our blood compared to the Israeli blood? Did anyone see how fast they were able to identify the crimes of October 7th? However, they stuttered. They didn't even mention the children of Gaza who have been killed. They say their faces are under the rubble. They're stuck in between. In crossfire. Who put them there? They're not talking about the war. We're talking about the genocide and everything that's linked to that. With everything, with all our struggle, I'm not saying whether do we abandon that or not. I'm saying we need to review everything that we have taken, and we need to stop being delusional. After I've unfortunately hear that we're still using the same narrative, and I agree with Mu'tasim, there are certain things that we have never thought of at all. There are different alternatives. I know of some organization that support in countries under siege, which they're not allowed to have civil society organizations, and they still find a way to send funds in solidarity. How we do so, how we actually get that, there are different ways that we can think about that other than the normal tracks. If we continue to work with grants, then definitely we're going to be slaves of the international community's funds for the future. As a moment, thinking about liberation, we're not going to discuss this today in the webinar. I apologize for all the questions that I'm unable to address today. due to the lack of time, we do need to address that at a different time. There's different ways to do so. We are not reinventing the wheel. It's there for those who are serious, who are ready to stand in solidarity with Palestinians. They're also might be jeopardized, and not just to leave us when push comes to shove. They're just going to throw us under the bus. We don't want that. We want people who would stand in solidarity with us. When seven Palestinian organizations were labeled as terrorists, even those who stood in solidarity with us, in addition to their statements, has anyone said that I'm going to defy that and send the funds? Some of them just gave statements because they don't want to jeopardize themselves or they don't want to be at risk. If anyone who thinks that they want to push Palestinians under the bus and put their safety under the, and they don't want to take any risk at all, even if they're standing in solidarity with us, we're going to hold them accountable. We don't want to work with them again. We need to redefine what's the expense that we expect from you. What kind of expense are you going to have to pay? What are the alternatives? All this, once again, we need to focus. Once again, that is putting the donors and the people who are, we need to create this. We should be the beginning and the end of this discussion. When we say that we want to strip ourselves away from that, if we want to have, for instance, festivals and have 700 donors when I can do it with zero money, that's better. Can I actually can I estimate the 15 shekels the same as 100,000 shekels, which is from a Palestinian person, a woman who's just selling a food just so she can donate some of the money for an oppression or an oppressed person? Do I appreciate that the same way that I appreciate a grant? That's where we start from. The moment we change our mindset, the moment that our people get involved, it doesn't matter how much you support, it doesn't matter how much you contribute. We need to hold ourselves accountable to be more transparent about what's going on. And once again, I'm not delusional that we're to say that we don't need any money at all. Let's boycott all funds and all grants. I know people are living on that. I know that people have no other source of income. But that reminds us again by the main question, what happens to the security forces if the Palestinian Authority is resolved? What would happen to the people working in the security forces if we're there 60% of the society? So once again, we take that into consideration. We're not undermining anyone's dignity or anyone's livelihood. However, we can't ask questions like this. Again, we need to start from our need. What do we need now? What would we create? How can we build our independence? How could we not just switch one donor for another? I don't want to have an alternative with others who have another capitalistic approach that's going to make our struggle expensive. The role of the banks and the role of the new liberalism, it has weakened the Palestinian liberation movements, because all this is one matrix, is a political matrix that's actually bringing us down. Once again, the discussion here, we need to brainstorm and think together on how can we do that. We need to start from ground zero. We need to ask ourselves from internally. We need to start to think that how to do so. We're going to focus on individuals. We're going to focus on people in solidarity, countries in solidarity, not just having United States and Europe. We need to start thinking of every shekel that we receive, any person contributing for any project that we do. And I can give you many examples who have done and contributed, even if it's small. We need to appreciate that. Before we think about money, let's put that aside. Today, what do we want? What do we want today? What's the role that we want to play for our people and within the framework of our liberation? If we ask that question first, we need to ask the right questions to be able to position ourselves correctly. There's lots of work that could be done without any money. In May, what happened in May, the uprising that happened in May, people in 1948, there was no need for money. There's lots of people, lots of lawyers who were working pro bono to help the people and support them without a donor say, go and represent that person. Don't represent that kid because he threw stones. How can we get back to ensure that we have all these all this support? How can we work against individualism that they're trying to fragment us? How can we work together collectively? Certain things that do require resources, for those that require resources, how do we get the resources? Is it going to be fundraised? Could we accept these grants, for example, and create a project that would continue to regenerate income for 10 years, or just spend it right now for the need that we have right now? Any of the progressive donors, of course, we all are proud to have a project in Palestine. Are you, as a donor, acceptable to say after 10 years, I'm going to close this project in Palestine because I want these people to be independent from me? Or are they just dealing with us as a tit for tat, where they want us to continue to have they want to continue to provide us with money in order for them to continue to have a project here? Why many people work in the progress? Why don't I ask them the question? They have nothing to do with it except for solidarity. It's none of their business, in other words. We want to ask our questions. We start by changing our mindset. We need to really change our mindset totally, and to have a reform of creating a clear common ground. And then after that, there are many ways to be creative, many things that we can solve things, and many things that we can do things differently. And there's lots of things that do not recreate creativity. We should relearn our own history. Sometimes they say you need to be creative. Sometimes you don't need to think out of the box. Sometimes you don't need to be creative. So unfortunately, we forgot our own history because it's not comfortable, because we had to pay a price for it in the past. But we really need to relearn that. Let's get back to our own values, our own history, and review that. Mu'tasim, and then Dua to conclude. I just have one comment. Let's try to conclude, and I prefer if we have clear actions for us to move forward, because in 5 minutes we need to wrap up. I just want to comment. I fully agree with what she mentioned when she meant the when I mentioned the government or others, or she mentioned when that mentioned the banks in the chat. It's true that what we're talking about has challenges, not only the expense that we're going to pay, but also there are challenges that we're going to face. It's what's most important is, based on the new framework that we're creating, the perspective are going to change, the priorities are going to change, and therefore you're going to hold accountable and oblige your partners on doing so. You need to discuss this with the government. This is the civil society's decision, and that's what we want to work on. And therefore, we need to create a decision on how to change your policies in order to be in line with our mission and vision and view. It's not, I'm going to inform the government, this is what the civil society has decided, and that's what you need to do. You need to reform your policies to work with us. So therefore, we need to recreate this partnership in order to open new fresh blood, let's say, or create new windows for the governments, for the organizations in terms of funds. And the other challenge, which is risky, is unifying the civil society organizations. That's very important. Through what we're asking for, we don't want to have them split into two or three or four parts, because then we are going to lose if we segment and fragment the civil society organization. If you want to clean up your house, you need to ensure that you have the majority among you in order not to create a divide, because maybe the conventional donors would actually be very happy to support them and support this split or this divide. You need to create a foundation for discussion, where discussion would be clear, you would be open to others, and you cannot blame others, and let's forget the past and start from a clear grounds where we're able to find the common ground common grounds among us. If the civil society is in divide, then definitely that's a big catastrophe. That's risky for all of us. We need to ensure that the civil society is unified. We need to move towards a collective, unified stance against the government, about the donors, against everyone. If we're standing as one hand, then we would succeed. Otherwise, we are at risk. Thank you so much, Mu'tasim. Mu'tasim has mentioned most of the points that I wanted to mention. We always think alike. I feel that this time I actually went ahead, or it's important. It's important for people to be two steps ahead. We don't want to continue to be, we want to even, we thank everyone who has attended here. And if they have new things that they would like to add, they can actually inform us and enlighten us. We would be more than happy to add on to what we have. I believe we also need to start by classifying the donors because there are some donors who are in solidarity for real, and some of them who are receiving funds from the governments. For example, we have donors who are just supporting a government. Sometimes their own governments have not had a clear stance towards the five countries that took their clear decision on October 7th, and they are also in solidarity, and they provide funds in support, and the funds come from unions and so on. And here we need to have a list of the stances and the countries, and it's good to have such a database that has clear classification of them, their stances, and also review their stances. And also the funds that are from countries, it's impossible to be done without banks. It's going to be through banks. And that does not mean that we should not change that and not neutralize it or shift it towards different types of projects. And also the standards that we have for receiving funds should be important. Do you agree with me, for example, on 1, 2, 3? Then I receive. If you don't agree to 1, 2, 3, then sorry, I won't accept your funds. That's important. Secondly, those where we have priorities, it's important to address these issues. The priorities are set by us. The priorities should be set are our priorities and the people's priorities, not the donors' priorities, one way or another. And many of the things that we set as priorities, and then at the end, based on the clipping our wings here and there, it would be as if just having workshops and just training and so on. So it's basically capacity building and nothing more. And the third point, which is very important for us to address, is the will that we have as organizations and how risky that is for them or not, whether there are people who are going to continue to receive funds. We need to explain to them that this is temporary and it's not going to be sustainable forever. It's going to be for a certain phase and then you're going to fall into the trap again. They're going to set you up, in other words. And you're going to be actually in clash with your own society. You're not going to be in clash with your own self. You're going to be opposing your whole community. How would we be able to get over that? And what's important, not everyone has the expertise and not everyone knows how to work in solidarity. So that's not everyone has that expertise and not everyone was involved in the past where they have the expertise needed. So for those who have went through the experience, they should be used as role models for others to learn from lessons learned, and it should be highlighted as a lessons learned, as success stories that we can capitalize on, and to dismantle the organization, the idea of having big organizations, that civil society organizations should be big. They should actually be one way or another, like working as clusters. They could be so small, but working every 10 or 20,000 should be sufficient, and they would be better than a million if we use the resources effectively and efficiently. For those who have actually worked on some countries that work in technology, they have created samples or examples which had some solidarity, which was based on working together. This is a topic that is very important for everyone right now, and it's something that we're discussing among us, but we're not sure how we're able to have people among us because they should be partners with us because it's very important for us to have a liberation-based approach based on the people's needs and not to have it top-down. It should come grassroots up. Thank you so much, Dua'a Suhail Amatasim. Who it's we have the questions in the chat box was full of questions. People were very interactive. Everyone was very They had goosebumps just simply from everything that they've heard. We are actually at a crossroads right now. We are smart. We know what the problem is. We know what the question is. We know what the answer is, but we need to have a sacrifice. And if the sacrifice is done, it should be done collectively. If it's a sacrifice, then everyone should sacrifice for it. And that's how we can work in resistance. That's the future of our resistance. I want to thank our panelists for this amazing webinar. Hopefully it would be the very first step of having a Palestinian collective stance. This was recorded. We're going to put a summary and send it to all those who have attended. And also we're going to publicize it on Build Palestine. We're going to send everyone and everyone involved who are with us today, we're going to send us any, we're going to send them the actions. We're going to send you an overview of the stances taken. We're also going to open the floor for you to be able to submit any suggestions. Anyone who was with us today who has clear suggestions on how we can find alternatives, we're going to open the floor for you to submit your suggestions to be part of the work as well. There's a template, there's a survey that we're going to send you for. We would love to hear from you. This is important for us to get feedback from you, to tell us your feedback. Do you agree or do you have any new ideas? And what new ideas you would like to have in future webinars? Our plan is to have every Monday to have a webinar. Next week, we're going to talk about who has provided the humanitarian support in Gaza during the last few weeks. We're going to have some organization who had their voluntarily teams working there in Gaza. Hopefully we're working, taking it one step at a time. We don't know what's going to happen or unfold during the next few days. We're going to take into consideration all your suggestions for creating our future, the future of our webinars. And Build Palestine is a network to link all those people who are doing the work on the ground and the people who want to stand in solidarity with them. Thanks again. I thank you all as panelists, attendees, and I also would like to extend our gratitude to Rawan. We hope that we did not speak fast. And also, I would like to thank everyone who are behind the scenes. I just want to mention one something simple, so just not to, because there are other people might not be involved, for example. Even if we have people who are influential or people who have their own interests in terms of funding, as it is today, we should not forget that those who are in Gaza and those who are fighting and those who are working in different ways. I'm not talking about in the struggle or the armed struggle, but I'm also talking about those who have been born on the Oslo Accords. They have never received funds or any money in that regard. So it's very important to start by what we can build good examples and not exert all our efforts in ending stopping those who are not in solidarity with us. So if those who don't want to join us, we shouldn't spend all the efforts in standing up against them. Thank you all, and we hope to see you next week, and we are going to hear from us soon. We're going to send you an update on what's coming up. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.